Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. Today is Sunday, May 19th. Interesting. 2024. My name is Melanie C., a recovered compulsive overeater from Canby, Oregon. The share ID numbers for Friday, May 17th, are the following. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study, the 7 a.m. meeting is share ID numbers. I'm getting a little tongue-tied today. 21410, 21410. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study, share ID number is 21411, 21411. This morning, A Vision for You presents The Training Wheels Stay On. Daily, we pick up these simple tools of recovery from the dis-ease of compulsive overeating, realizing that it is not an overnight matter. A one-and-done kind of thing, it is not. We must keep it up for a lifetime. Restless, irritable, and discontentedness being symptoms of a life unmanageable. AA's Big Book is written as a way out and a way of life at its core. We are sure God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free, and we cannot subscribe to belief that this life is a veil of tears, though it was just that way for many of us. But it is clear that we made our own misery. God didn't do it. Avoid, then, the deliberate manufacture of misery. But if trouble comes, cheerfully capitalize it as an opportunity to demonstrate his omnipotence. That's just a bit of what the Big Book has to say about sticking with this and keeping the training wheels on page 43 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So each new morning, it is with humble gratitude that we awaken to much more of the same. It is important to realize that left untreated, we will soon find ourselves worse off than we were before we ever recovered. We treat ourselves at day 1,257 the same way that we treated ourselves in the beginning, working the steps. The walls of 12 steps each and every day. We strap on this Big Book, and with it, we can live life we could never have lived before. So drill this in. How often have we thought to ourselves, wow, it's been such a long time since ... Perhaps I can add it back in now, or I don't have to do this much so long anymore. I can do here and there and pick and choose what I want to do anymore because I've been recovered for so long. Well, we never graduate above that beginning. Never get above our raising. Today, our guest speaker is going to go much more deeply into this idea that we do not ever take off the training wheels. Those key beginning elements that were taught to us on day one. Oh, it is easy to listen to that small voice in the background and consider otherwise. What we are here today, that we are headed for towards relapse and death if we do so. No kidding around. Our guest speaker is one of those students of the Big Book Recovered that perhaps learned some of these dangerous pitfalls along her recovery journey and here to pass on the wisdom of becoming and maintaining sober as a result of keeping on those training wheels. It is a delight and with great excitement to introduce to you today a real visionary, a recovered compulsive overeater through the 12 steps of AA modeling daily. Our guest hails from the wonderful state of Ohio, a state known for its fertile ground and its hardworking populace. It's no wonder that keeping her eyes focused ahead and on the ground comes naturally. She never gives up. So with this and our hearts and our mind focused on her presentation today, let's listen to her. And please help me give her a warm, warm welcome to the line this morning. Rena L. from Ohio. Good morning, and welcome.
Ah, good morning. Hopefully I can be heard. Yeah?
Yes, loud and clear.
Excellent.
Jump right in here,
okay.
Woman.
All right, here it goes. Thank you for that lovely introduction. My name is Rena L. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I have a history of binge eating and food addiction, anorexia, exercise compulsivity. I've had years of being overweight or obese, whatever the doctors called it, and years of being underweight and emaciated. And I share all that just so you know a little bit about where I come from. But either way, I'm just another recovered compulsive eater. I'm going to take a deep breath. Just slow down or attempt to slow down. If I don't get to everything I want, right, my words are whatever comes out is what's supposed to come out. And I'm going to start with a prayer. On page 63, there's the third step prayer. And then in the next paragraph, it says, the wording was quite optional, so long as we express the idea, voicing it without reservation. So sometimes the words in the big book don't always work for me. I love what's in the big book, but sometimes the wording of the prayers, I don't know who, all the these and the thous, I get lost. And so every couple of years, I write another version based on what I'm needing. Here's the latest from a couple of weeks ago. God, or great mystery, I have trouble believing you exist or care about me, but I choose to believe that you care about me and the greater good and are more powerful than my disease. Help me remove the blinders that keep me from seeing reality. Help me turn my thoughts, desires, and actions over to your care and trust that you're handling the bigger picture. Show me the path to compassion, love, acceptance, humility, service, and remaining teachable inside and outside the room. Help me trust that no matter what happens, I'm okay. Now I feel much more relaxed, especially if you're new or struggling on this line. I just want to start by saying that the details and the trajectory of my life and my disease and my recovery may be totally different from you, and that is no worries about that. I encourage you to focus on the feelings and ask, have I ever felt that way? I don't plan to provide a ton of specifics about my food plan, but I'm going to give a disclaimer to the extent that some comes out. My recovery needs to be the opposite of the specific forms that my disease has taken in my life, not the opposite of yours. So what might be the highest recovery for me may be a deadly or unsafe or unloving choice for you. I used to get so turned around hearing other people's food plans or about what they did, and I don't anymore. I have surrendered 100%. I've left the debating society, and I hope you can too. One other thing before I get really going, is I'm not used to speaking without the affirmation of faces validating what I'm saying, you know, the nodding, you know. So this is a huge challenge for me, and I am grateful to know that there are people who I love on this line and who love me, who are supporting me, and letting go of getting affirmation from what I'm saying and just continuing to speak. So, okay, I'm hopefully going to talk about what it was like for about 10 or 15 minutes. And then hopefully just move on, set a timer to do so, to get to what happened, and then really focus on the title of my talk. But I'm going to start, right, with what it was like. And this is not a why I'm an addict story, because I don't ask why anymore. I believe I came this way. Food and body size have always had an outsized role in my life. And I've picked just a few highlights to demonstrate that. This isn't everything that's ever happened to me. It's just a few highlights. I was born 3 months early, and I'm not going to give a lot of numbers as I go along, but this one I feel like is safe to say, is that I was born less than 2 pounds, and that was always a story in my family about that. My first word, it says it in my baby book, so my first word was cookie. My first sentence, I want a cookie. And what I remember from my childhood the most, you know, when I was young, was sitting in my parents' basement. There was fake wood paneling in the background, so that tells you my age maybe a little bit. I had crumbs in my lap. I'm watching Bozo the Clown, crumbs from cookies and crackers and who knows what, right? All alone in that basement, watching TV, lost in fantasy. And the minute I learned to read, that switched over to books, right? I remember there's a loud crowd of people always busy upstairs, but I'm alone in the basement in fantasy and food. And then suddenly, around the age of 10, very early then, I don't know if it's so early anymore, but I developed, had early puberty, and suddenly a size double D chest popped out and hips, and my mom put me on a lot of fad diets, a lot. And I just want to note, I have a great relationship with my mom today. But back then, I became what can only describe, and I'm going to try not to use bad words, so just out of respect for people for whom that's a problem, so I became FU fat. F.U., I'm going to eat what I want, drink what I want, say and do what I want. I was a really fun teen to have. And I wasn't the most liked or loved kid, but I might have been the most notorious. And it was hard to pull off cool and punk in the late 80s when The only thing I could wear was Lane Bryant's, and they didn't have cool stores yet. I pretended I didn't care. I didn't know I could say no or not yet, and I took what I could get in all respects. Junior year, as a result, I'm not going to stay in high school too long. I'm moving through. Junior year, as a result of my panicked attempts to avoid needing to live with my parents forever, I went from nearly failing out and constantly being suspended to, this is going to become to no surprise to people that know me or any addict, really. I went from getting all D's and F's to suddenly straight A's and wrote a great college essay for one semester. And then senior year, I remember getting called down to the office. There was no cell phone. You had to get called down. And it was my mom on the line calling for permission to open the mail, my mail. And I got into a competitive college that no one expected me to get into. I probably shouldn't have, but I did. And my mom proposed we celebrate at my favorite restaurant. And I said, why do we always have to celebrate with food? I don't know why that came out in that moment. And I certainly didn't know that that would be the start of my first bout of anorexia. But as my weight went down, I'm suddenly feeling tender and a little sad for 17-year-old me. As the weight went down, I got so many compliments. I knew there was always a pretty girl underneath there. And my personality changed. Besides the fact that I couldn't stop smoking, that increased with the not eating. But other than that, I became what in quotes, what I can only call a nice girl. I hated the compliments. I felt they were so hypocritical. I was so angry. But also, I'm sure some of you can relate, I also desperately wanted those compliments, and I got super attached to them. So now you know the pattern. Eventually in college, I binged while I was in a blackout from drinking, and then I couldn't stop binging, and I tried to exercise it off, restrict it off, but I eventually gave up because I couldn't beat the calculus, and I became FU fat again for years. There was lots of drugs and alcohol, and I don't really remember eating, but I know I was always eating. I'm going to fast forward. Just picking out some highlights. Fast forward to the end of law school, the graduation, and I'm sticking to a seat, stuffed into a dress because I didn't want to get a bigger size, and it's like 90 degrees out. I'm so grateful for the graduation robe over the outfit, right? And the dean says he practiced my name, and so this is for the whole graduation, he practiced my name so many times with his wife the night before because I was going to get so many awards. And it's true, I got almost every award. And I took a shot of Southern Comfort boldly and loudly for each award to hide the fact that I was desperately proud, right? That I had showed them, the ones who thought I couldn't be fat and successful, or when I was wrongly placed in the slow class when I was younger because I was physically smaller for being premature. I thought it made me look humble to take a shot for each award. Ugh, that makes sense. In any event, the point of this is that the dean added a paper plate award. It was the paper plate awards that my peers had voted, separate from the academic award, that weren't really part of the graduation. They were in a student magazine. But he said, he goes, oh, she got some paper plate award. I don't understand. And my throat still catches every time I share this the past few years. It used to not make my throat catch. The longer I'm in recovery, the sadder it makes me. And the award was, most likely to die in a Chris Farley-like fashion. Those that are too young to know, right, or too old, I don't know what that means. If you're in my generation, you'll know, right? He died of a combination of obesity and alcoholism and drug addiction. They weren't wrong about me, right? I kept eating and drinking and eating and drinking. And then a 10-year relationship ended a few years after that, and I just stopped eating, and I drank. And this isn't a lead in that program, but it all relates, so I'll get through it. In an alcoholic blackout alone in downtown Chicago, working in the largest law firm, all I was alone in dark bars all night and eventually in alleys. And I finally lost the weight, and I was successful. So I thought, just like Bill in the Big Book, I thought I had arrived, but it was a horrible and dark time. I was emaciated, and eventually my leather pants became child-sized pants. But here's the truth about my disease. I would go home with any stranger to avoid going home and binging on food in a blackout. And that is the kind of compulsive overeater that I am. So what happened? Those are just some highlights. What happened? I finally got the treatment for drugs and alcohol, but it was the worst. I couldn't stop around the clock binging on food. I'd go to meetings in the other fellowship, dress like I had somewhere to go after, and I'd go home and binge to the point of pain. Beg God or whoever was listening just to take the urge to binge for me or take me from this planet. and I'd eventually pass out and wake up covered in sweat and tried to exercise it off to no avail. Eventually, when I finally got honest in those rooms, people would come up to me afterwards and say, you need to go to OA. Oh, I did not want to come here. I really didn't. But I eventually did. And it didn't work. Well, that's actually not true. It did work. I didn't get abstinent right away. But for the first time, people knew me. Alcohol allowed me to be out in the world with people and keep a secret that I was totally alone. Food allowed me to be home and keep a secret that I was totally alone. Just I was home alone, and it was a secret for me. So I didn't stop hurting myself with food yet. Those OA people from those early meetings are still some of my closest friends. I've been maid of honor in their weddings. We've taken trips. I just saw some of them nearly 20 years later from then in Chicago last weekend. But eventually, I found some recovery now. I finally surrendered to the 12 steps. I get a food plan. I abstain from certain ingredients and behaviors, and I'm doing it as authentically as possible until I start to get comments about my weight, right? And I tell myself I don't care. I ignore it all because I'm abstinent, and I don't need to worry about my weight or size. And usually that happens when I start to coincide with me letting go of recovery tasks, telling myself I don't need to do this anymore or that anymore. God doesn't want me to travel with food anymore. Good grief. Eventually my weight drops. After losing the amount of weight I need that was healthy to drop, right, after binging for months and months or years and years, but eventually the weight dropped so much that even I can't ignore it. But I didn't know that just like I need to abstain from certain ingredients to avoid triggering binging or my food addiction, I also need to abstain from my weight dropping below what is healthy, because once I hit that point, just like when I ingest sugar, not that everyone needs to not eat sugar for this program. That's on my list of binge foods, right? Because once I hit that point where my weight has dropped, I'm on an elevator downward and I don't understand it and I can't stop it. And then after 2 years in the hell that is in an anorexia, right, lying about my weight, I get it's such a sneaky part of my disease. I binge, probably out of true hunger and desperation physically and spiritually. But then, of course, the food addiction's triggered, and I lose a year or two to round-the-clock painful binging where everything in my life goes away. The program has brought me so much, and I watch it go away, where eventually I don't want anyone or anything in my life, and I can't get out the door once I'm in the food. Rinse, wash, repeat. That cycle, everything I just shared, has repeated at least 5 times since I came to the rooms of OA. I'll spare you all the details, but I must have needed every one of them. All right, what's it like now? Okay, well, the last relapse was horrible. Eventually, my sponsor, who had stuck with me through it all, right, she suggested, when I didn't even want to commit to not binging for a day. I gave up. Like, I'm not even going to commit to that. She said, why don't you just text me in 3 hours? And so I didn't binge for the next 3 hours and texted her. And I kept doing that, and it persisted, and it worked. Right? Miraculously, I got abstinent again. But I was starting to get comments about looking very thin. And sometimes they were comments from people that they were worried about me. And sometimes they were compliments from people in my life that seemed to be attached to me being fashionably or what doctors tell me is dangerously thin for my body. So here we go again. It's about to happen. But something else happened. My sponsor bravely called and admitted she was in relapse. And that she hadn't told me because it was such a miracle that I stopped hurting myself with food and she didn't want to throw me off. And I just want to pause and tell you that I adore her and I love our relationship and we still talk every week and she is one of my dearest friends. And because I felt so loved, I understood why she didn't tell me. And I hate our disease. I just want to note that it makes us lie to each other. But I committed to myself that the next morning I was calling whoever on that damn vision meeting, put their name out for sponsorship, who was close to my time zone. And here's the miracle. I did it. The woman I called is still my sponsor. She's on the line. She texted me this morning. And here's what's different. I really like my sponsor, but she's not my closest friend. She sent me a list of non-negotiables. Most are from the big book, and some are things that have worked in her experience. When I read that list, I was like, oh, no, I've been coming around a long time, and I know I'm not doing those things. Meet 5 days a week to read from the big book and get through the steps as quickly as possible to get a relationship with a power greater than myself. And then right when I finish step 12, start sponsoring and get a new big book so I can be open to a new experience. Really? I've been sober for how many years? I don't need a new big book. Ugh. And then the vision meeting every day and share there, right? at that culty meeting where they called themselves recovered, so to pause and note how I introduced myself, right? Recovered compulsive overeater. There's a whole bunch of other things. Pray and meditate in the morning. Center a nightly email with, you know, my food plan for the next day and what I'm grateful for. 3 outreach calls. Well, I'm going to tell you the rest of this in stories, little stories. I'm going to check my time. I honestly have no idea how long I've been talking. Okay, good. I'm at a good spot, hopefully. I'm actually too nervous to calculate the time, but I'm just going to keep going. Okay. The rest of the story is one of surrender, and hopefully the title of my talk will make sense as I go through it. So that very first day with my new sponsor, I texted her at the end of the day saying, it's so amazing. I made an outreach call. I did something on the list. I was so proud that I never really did. I never thought I would. And she wrote back, Rena, non-negotiable is non-negotiable. Excuse me? I negotiate for a living. Non-negotiable. Everything's negotiable. I was enraged when I got that text. I almost threw my phone at the wall, and then I took a deep breath, and I started crying. I said, somebody has the guts to stand up to my disease. Finally. I took a deep breath. I made the 2 other outreach calls, and I realized I had never done something I really didn't want to do in program, and I felt more free and hopeful for my recovery than I've ever felt, or at that point had ever felt. Right. So what's the training wheel tale? Well, once I became recovered, I thought, well, now I don't need to make those outreach calls. And again, the universe stepped in right away to tell me that the training wheels don't come off. I still make those calls every day. Another tale of the training wheels. I was in Puerto Rico seeing friends, you know, in recovery, and I text my sponsor just my food for the next day, because it was easier to text than to email when I was traveling. And I said, you know, I finally got to a grocery store here, got what I needed for tomorrow. But I just want to note, you know, the fat was a little, I didn't really get it in at dinner. It was too difficult at the people's house I was at. I just couldn't get enough of what I needed. So I didn't get that portion of my meal in. But I did as good as possible. And I thought, that's great. So that I'm getting into bed, I'm in some sexy lingerie, don't worry, I won't give you the details, but I'm getting into bed, sexy lingerie with my spouse, things are feeling great, I'm feeling good, I'm abstinent, I'm grateful that I want to be in bed, that's not something, right, I want to do in our disease, and I get a text, I hear my phone go off, I should have turned the ringer off, but I didn't, and it's ding, Rena, get the fat in, ! What? Again, I almost threw that phone at the wall. I thought, I am about to have a lot of fun right now in cute lingerie. I finally want to be right where I'm at. And you want me to do what? Get out of bed? And then I paused and thought, wow, someone has the guts to stand up to my disease. It wasn't about that portion of fat. It's about the history of my disease is to start telling myself I don't need to eat everything all the time, if it's or I can exercise more, some way to like sneakily restrict and make it seem like it's perfectly okay, and that this is where it starts. And I got out of bed and I got the fat portion from the refrigerator. I will note that my sponsor later told me that she knew it was okay to do that because she knew I had just been to the store, so she knew I had something in the hotel room, and I had it. And I tell you, my brain got so quiet. I felt so free. And I went back to bed and had all the fun, maybe even more fun, because I was totally free and present. So that's an example of, like, the training wheels don't come off. I follow my food plan just the same. There's 3 or 4 more stories I picked out. I just put little titles. We'll see how many I get to. This one is really particular to me, but I want to mention it in case anyone struggles with this in this way. And it brings up an outside issue, and I'm going to keep it within the traditions of that, which is that even though I thought I had nothing left to learn, right, about food and food plans, it was on that list to work with a nutritionist for my sponsor, one of those list of things. And so I found a nutritionist, and here's the difference. For the first time, she didn't just have experience with eating disorders. She had experience with compulsive eaters and food addiction. But specifically, that takes the form of binging, food addiction, anorexia, and compulsive exercise. Now I couldn't hide, because this is someone that knew how to work with people with all aspects of my disease and had worked with people in our program. And she had me buy something. I mean, this is not the brand name. I'm just going to call it a magic scale because that's what I call it, without a brand. And I don't decide my goal weight, and I don't know my weight, and I am powerless and I need help. My nutritionist takes care of my weight. I jump on that scale at certain intervals. They're in my calendar. There's no data on that scale for me. It goes directly to her. And she tells me whether to add or not. And a few months, so then, right, that is like an extra intervention, an extra training wheel to stop the pattern of my disease and my history of relapse. I need the spiritual tools. I need a relationship with the higher power. And for me, the surrender was turning over my weight to her. A few months in, she proposed, she's like, your weight is starting to go below. And I'm like, oh, this is the relapse. This is it. What do I do? And she said, you need more food and you need to stop all exercise. I wanted proof. Tell me the numbers. Prove it to me that I need to. And she said, oh no, you told me when it started that you surrendered. And I did. As a result of that surrender, and I'm going to cry when I say this, I've been weight stable for over 2.5 years, longer than any other time in my life, including in abstinence. And about 6 months of being stable in, I said, well, now I could start exercising and cycling again. I love to cycle. And she said, do you think that's right for you? And it wasn't. I surrendered. For some of my sponsees, part of their recovery is continuing to exercise after they lost the weight to be a healthy size. But this is a funny thing to say, but I abstained from cycling because for me and my disease, the training wheels don't come off. I get to take walks with time boundaries, and that's when I make my outreach calls, to keep me from fixating on me, right, while walking, and also to make sure my heart rate doesn't go up too much, right? But other than that, I have surrendered exercise for today. The training wheels don't come off for me. I still go to a meeting every day. I email my sponsor every night, and every time I think I don't need to do that, like, you are not graduating. I have an 11-step partner. Everyone needs an 11-step partner. There are so many ways to work the 11-step, but for me, right, for me, the training wheel, I need lots of training wheels. And the 11-step train that I'm on is another training wheel. I'm of service. I sponsor. I share. I speak when asked, like this. I look for ways to be of service. And instead of, not only do the training wheels not come off, but the longer I am in recovery and recovered, the more I need to add. So I'm in big book studies and workshops. Let me see my time. All right. I want to talk about the 10-step in God, because I don't talk much about God. And I made a decision to talk about God. Well, not just to talk about God, to talk. But remember, my training wheels don't come off. So how do I keep making a decision and connected to God? And one of the ways is the 10th step. And there are a lot of the 10th step, and I'm out of the debating society, so I'm not going to tell you how to do the 10th step. I've been doing it all sorts of ways. But a couple of months into being recovered, I received word that a judge in a case that I care very much about issued an opinion that went against my client, and that I really believed was the wrong decision on all counts. And I felt punched in the stomach and enraged. And I stopped dead in my tracks, and I took a deep breath. And I said, just Rena, pick up the phone and make an outreach call. This is what you've been practicing for, making all the little 10 steps. This is the one. Do it. And I did it. And I have a little form that takes me through the big book process, how it affects my pride and self-esteem and finances and the selfishness that I want the world my way and the dishonesty that I'm right and I know the real reason the judge found this way and it's personal and I know what's best for my client and the resentment the judge is wrong and afraid for my client, for me, for what it means for future cases. But that's not why I'm telling you this story. Because what happened at the end of that 10th step is a pause. And I believe the person on the line said, so what's your spiritual truth? And really, I still now take a deep breath when I think of it. It takes my breath away. Here's the real truth for me. I don't know the bigger picture. I am just a chess piece. I don't know everything else on the board or how one thing affects another. I choose to believe that God or the universe is taking care of it all for all of our greater good, even if I don't see it. So maybe my client couldn't handle that much money at the time. Maybe the appeal will be successful and create greater justice for more people. Newsflash, that is what happened. but maybe I need the humility and experience right now to deepen my recovery and make me available to be of service to someone else. Who knows? I don't need to. I don't even want to. I let go of the knot inside. I'm now in the midst of a deeper extended work fourth step, and I'm revisiting my lingering resentment towards the judge. But at the moment, the heat of it left. The thinking about it, the refeeling of it over and over and replaying it was removed by that 10-step call. And just a few days ago, I was reading, I'm reading the Big Book Stories with another recovered sponsee, and it's on page 187, Alcoholics Number 3. And I came across this line, and I thought of that moment of spiritual truth for me, my truth. Here's the quote. I admitted that from then on, I was willing to let God take over instead of me. Each day, I would try to find out what his will was and try to follow that, rather than trying to get him to always agree that the thing I thought up for myself were the things that were best for me. I have a little more time. I think I do. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the 9-step and some amends. There's also lots of different ways to do the 8th and 9th step that I'm not going to take an issue. I'm not going to, you know, tell you how to do that, right? There are so many different ways, and the only wrong way to do it is to not do it. But I'm going to talk about something I have so much shame about, that I plagiarized a paper in college. And then I left it, it was in philosophy, and I left the PhD program in philosophy because I was afraid and ashamed about that I would continue to plagiarize and couldn't stop. And then in recovery, when I would share this on, you know, 5th step, it was hard. The teacher is no longer alive that I sent that paper to, what to do. No sponsor was ever sure all these years later is what to do. But in a moment connecting with God or the universe one morning, I asked myself, what was the true nature of the wrong? It was not trusting myself, thinking I wasn't smart enough to understand Hegel and Judith Butler, complicated philosophers, right? And sure, I was getting wasted every night and binging on food in college. But the deeper truth was that this was the hardest material in philosophy for me, and I didn't really think I could do it. So after all these years and many years and other programs in this one, the amend became really clear to me. I went and bought books by each of them, the two philosophers, and I wrote a paper on it for 0 accolades. And what I realized is that I could understand it, and I wanted to know more. I kept reading, and eventually I took 6 classes, or maybe it was even more, exploring the material and keep reading philosophy. And so when the university where I teach my area of practice at a local law school for 6 years contacted me to make sure I still wanted to teach this, you know, it was like 2.5 years ago, I said, sure, but maybe instead of what I've been teaching, if you ever need a philosophy of law instructor, I'm interested. Well, for the past, I've now taught it 3 times. I just finished another semester of teaching philosophy of law, and I'll be doing it again next year. And I don't know, guys, it is like the greatest joy and treat for me that I get to do this. And it is all born of an amend. And all the amends aren't always that perfect with a wrapped bow around it. I've had some go very strange. But I could tell you that, you know, I just feel so grateful. What else do I want to share before I wrap up? There are some other things, you know, that this one is a little more vulnerable to share, but for so many years being dangerously underweight or binging around the clock, I didn't get my period for years in OA. And then now with my weight being stable for the past few years, you know, just on the cusp of perimenopause, I turned 50 this year, right? I've had my period back, and I share that because I'm discovering aspects of desire and sexuality suppressed by either being dangerously underweight and losing my hair and always cold, or binging around the clock and being constantly full with swollen feet and prediabetes symptoms. So finally, on the eve of perimenopause, I've had 2 years in my body and discovered aspects of desire and sexuality that I had no idea I had been suppressing. And it is terrifying and a true joy. And I didn't even know I was suppressing at all. I thought binging around the clock with me constantly giving in to my desire, and it was the opposite. It was a deprivation, the same deprivation as my years of restricting. 10,000 calories or more, right? In the sitting, deprived me of real deep desire and the joy and pain of everyday life. I'm grateful to be awake with all of you. I no longer think I have the answers for anyone, even about this program or the steps. My ego simply can't handle it.
I'm still using training wheels. One day at a time, I hope never to take the training wheels off. And that's really all I wanted to share. So I look forward to hearing from you all and to hear your questions. So thank you.
Thank you very much. What a delight. What a voice of recovery in the things that this program promises to do. Thank you so much, Rena. Appreciate that very, very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Talking about, which is first our share ID number for today, and then next on to Q&A. The share ID number for Sunday, May 19th, 2021, I'm sorry, 2024 is 21412, 21412. So the lines are now open for questions for Rena. Please unmute your phone by pressing star one on your phone keypad. Offer your first name, the first letter of your last name, and then your state. Then immediately upon asking your question, please press star one again to remute your line to be nice and quiet. So who has a question for Rena this morning?
Mary Lee R.
in Eugene, Mary Oregon. Lee R. Gotcha. Thank you. Good morning to you.
Dale Y.
Dale Y. What state are you from, Dale?
Illinois.
Oh, thanks.
Leah S.
Leah S. Well, hey, there you are. From New York. I know that one. Nice to hear you.
Jordan L.
Hey, there you are. Hello, good morning to you. Jordan L., Colorado.
Good morning.
I know that one, too. Good to hear you. Okay, let's start with that lineup here. Get things started. We'll generate more questions, I'm sure of it. So we have on the lineup right now is Mary Lee R. from Oregon, Dale Y., Illinois, Leah S., New York, and Jordan L. from Colorado. Your question this morning, and good morning to you, Mary Lee.
Well, good morning to all of you. Would you be willing to share the non-negotiables? The question.
Oh, thank you. It's a great question. And I don't have the sheet in front of me, but some of the non-negotiables are, one was getting a food plan and making a list of my red foods, you know, the things that trigger me, and behaviors, right? Foods and behaviors. It was getting a plan from a nutritionist, food plan. It was, and following that food plan everywhere, right, all the time. three, it was getting a new big book and to start fresh, to get a new experience and being willing to meet, you know, 5 days a week to get through the big book and get through the steps that I would start sponsoring right the minute we finished the 12 steps, like the next day, that I would make 3 outreach calls every day. That I would, and that I do these things are the things I do, right, that I would email my sponsor every night with a gratitude list, the foods, my food plan for the next day and how I've been of service. Going to meetings, vision and some other meetings, and sharing at least one of those meetings every week, which that one I'm not perfect at that one, but I do try to at least be of service to a meeting once a week. And there were a few other things, but that's what I'm remembering. So hopefully that gives you a picture of some of the things. Thanks. Good question.
Thank you very much, Mary Lee, for asking the question. And be sure and give Rena a call if you didn't capture the rest of those. Those of you are probably saying, oh, would you please repeat? Give her a call. We'll get you her phone number at the end of the meeting. Kind of set you up there, Rena. Next up,
I talk fast.
The next one up for a question for you, Rena, is Dale Y. from Illinois and followed by Leah S. Hey, Dale.
Hi, this is Dale. Illinois. I don't really have a question. I have, Rena is my sponsor, and I thank God every single day throughout the entire day for her. She's helping save my life, and I don't know what I would do without her. Thank you.
Let's see if we can parlay that into a question, because that's what we want to make sure that we encourage, and I hear your heart. So what can we say about that, about our sponsors, and what would be a good
question about a sponsor. How come I need one? How do they guide me? What do you think, Gail?
I guess my question would be, how do you go about finding a good sponsor?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Dale. I think I started crying as you were sharing, so thank you. This program, there's just so much we get, right? Besides just putting down the food, I'm so grateful for that. And for finding a sponsor, I know there are a lot of different ways people talk about, but I will tell you that for me, it was throwing up my hands and saying, I'm not looking anymore. I called the first person who put their name down in Vision and thought, I just need someone to take me through this book, right? Sometimes you get like a deep spiritual connection. Sometimes you get someone who provides exactly what you need. Sometimes it's just someone to take you through the book. But either way, my experience is I don't look for the perfect sponsor, right? And I know other people are like, look for someone who has what you want. It's pretty hard to do that on Zoom and over the phone, you know, to know what somebody has. And so that's what I did. So there's lots of ways to go about it, but it is a good question.
I like the answer too. That's great. It's true. Okay, so let's see. What's up? Leah S. from New York. Your question, please, followed by Jordan.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Rena. Thank you for this incredible, incredible share. My question is, how do I phrase it? It flew out of my mind. When you are right, how did you come to terms with yourself? How did you attain that healthy equilibrium within yourself until you did the studies, until you found out, you know. So in the interim, thank you.
Thank you for the question. I'm not fully sure I understand the question, but I'm going to do my best with what I think you're getting at, but I could be misreading that, so my apologies if I am. I hate when I feel like unheard, so I do hear you. I'm just not sure I understand. In terms of, for me, it was like what motivated me to keep going forward in recovery before I was recovered, really, like before I really, you know, and I'm grateful that I just surrendered from living it. Like for me, it just, I don't know how to answer that except for to say that surrender. It was just surrender. I am so tired of fighting, you know. I'm just tired of fighting with myself. And it was just tired of being in this disease, you know, and desperation. And not wanting to be on this planet anymore because I was in so much pain from this disease. But it just made me willing to take the next right action, even when I didn't feel right inside. Even when I didn't feel it inside. And some days I still don't, but I still take the action. And that brings me right to the next right thing. And then I start to feel better inside. So I'm not sure I answered that question fully, but that's the best I can do. So
thank you so much.
Thank you, Leah, for your question. Let's see. It looks like Jordan L. is up next. And after Jordan L.'s question, the lines are going to be open for additional questions. So get ready to press star one. Hey, Jordan, good morning to you. Glad that you're here.
Hey, good morning, Melanie. Thanks for moderating. And Rena, thank you so much for your share. I could hear the honesty and authenticity in sharing your story. And I guess this is my personal opinion, but I think that that is recovery. I think that that's how we convey what recovery is and what it looks like, and it's by example. So thank you very much. I appreciated you talking a lot about surrender with the food in the beginning, and surrender around a food plan, and surrender around the the negotiation that our disease tries to negotiate with us. So I guess if you could tell us a little bit more about surrender today in everyday life, and surrender with some of the unmanageability that could exist outside of just food?
Mm-hmm. Excellent question. And the most, the one that's probably the more uncomfortable, right, is to be current, to talk about my feelings and experiences in the moment. It's easy to talk about a week ago, but, you know, I struggled with, as I'm, I don't think this makes me unique, whether it's been internet surfing and internet shopping, right, or lately I've got a Lego building habit that is hilarious to me, but, and that, that one I'm not struggling with, but the internet shopping and other behaviors that really take me away and make me feel totally alone, those are the things that produce unmanageability in my life. And what I'm grateful for is that these are things I get to work on. If I'm in the food and just miserable, I don't even get to look at these things. But now I get to, and I get to bring in, use all of the, you know, use the steps and use the tools of the program, you know, to get through them. And I still struggle with them. And that's just the reality of it. I have days of complete relief. I get more and more days of relief from still, from seeking escape, from being present and here with you all. And the biggest thing that gets me out of it every day is outreach calls, which is crazy that, like, just somehow finding the time to make the outreach calls is what creates space in my life from everything else, because it gets me out of the computer screen, you know? And so I don't have a deep answer to that, except for that outreach calls and quiet time in the morning with a higher power, checking in with my sponsor, that it forces me to look in every night, like, what happened today, right? Having an 11-step partner, talking it through, what's going on with me right now, keeps things from boiling over, bubbling over, 10 steps. Yeah, but I also really want to acknowledge that there's all different kinds of unmanageability. I get a ton of outside help also, which I don't want to focus on too much, but it's an important part of my recovery. It was an important surrender for me to realize certain unmanageabilities were coming up over and over again over the years that I kept ignoring. And I'm very grateful that I also get outside help from a 12th therapist who's also in recovery that helps. But that is an outside tool. So thanks.
Thank you very much, Jordan L., for your question. Hey, you know what? There's lots of time for additional questions this morning. If you have a question for Rena, press star 1 on your phone keypad. First name, first letter of your last name, and your state, please.
Shelly E.
This is Sarah C. Shelly E.
Sherry E. York.
Sherry Z. Did I hear Sherry Z?
Sherry
F. Carolyn S. from New York.
Carolyn S. is what I did here. I know you weren't.
Lizzie N. New York.
Lizzie N. from New York.
Jessica C.
Geneva, is that what I heard? No.
Anita?
Did I hear Anita? I got
Anita
you.
Jay.
I did hear.
Massachusetts.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Jessica C.
Jessica C.
Nancy C.
Nancy C.
Olivia K.
From Iowa.
Olivia, hang on just a minute. Oh, Iowa, and I'll get you. Okay, Iowa is who I heard. Who was
Jenny
that?
R.
Olivia
Jenny
from
R.
Illinois.
I got you, Olivia. I think just before
Thank
Jenny. Mm-hmm. Anyone else? I know I missed a few. My apologies.
I don't know if you got me. It's Sherry M. from New York.
I did not. Thank you. I knew that there was another one there. I know that you're down farther than you should be, but I apologize for that. So let's go with that lineup. That's a wonderful turn of events there with the list of folks that have questions this morning. So let's start out with Shelly E. and then Caroline S., and then we'll go on from there. So hang tight, y'all. Okay, let's go.
Wonderful.
Are you ready?
Shelly E., a recovered compulsive overeater. Fantastic job. Oh, my gosh, what a wonderful way to start my morning. My question for you is, what do you do when you are traveling? And what length do you go when you are out to eat? And what does your program look like at that point?
Thank you, Shelly, for that question. Someone who knows all too well the lengths I go to when I travel. So I just want to note that I travel a lot, like maybe half the time. And my program and my food plan, everything needs to be portable. Like super portable. And that to me has meant I will travel with food. And by the way, I want to be super clear. I don't know what anyone else needs to do with their food. And surrender and recovery might look very different from someone else. It might be the exact opposite of what I do. I just want to start by saying that because everyone's disease is different. So our recovery needs to be different. And on this food front. But for me, it means making sure that before I get any on any plane, I always have a meal with me. No liquids. Don't bring liquids. But I always have a meal with me because I don't know if I'm going to be delayed. Right. And sometimes I try to have one extra meal to go in case I'm really delayed because I need to make sure like this is life or death for me. Right. I need to have this. And I remember one day my spouse asked, I was so nervous. How am I going to bring all the food? What am I going to do? And he said, what if you had no shame about what you needed to take care of yourself? And ever since he asked that question, I brought my food anywhere. I don't care how. I've been at the French Laundry in Napa, and I've sent the chef a list of what I needed to eat, and they served it to me, you know, and if they couldn't, and I said, if you can't, I will bring my own food, or I will eat before. It doesn't matter to me. Either way, I'm going to be taking care of myself, so I bring food everywhere. Before I go to any hotel for more than a night, even for just a night, I ask for a refrigerator or microwave. They will do it anywhere, from a fancy hotel to a dirt cheap hotel. Right now I'm in a hotel and I just had my hotel room breakfast. I arrange for groceries to be delivered if I need to before I get somewhere. And it's not that there's not food everywhere, right? That I can't find things, but I want to know that my needs are going to be taken care of wherever I go. And I don't depend on anybody else to take care of that for me, except for my higher power, you know? And I'm trying to think of anything else that's, I'm certainly available for more questions about the how-tos specific into my food plan, but I do weigh and measure wherever I go. And I, again, that might not be right for you. For somebody else, that might be your disease. And I don't weigh and measure. Not only do I want to make sure I don't eat more than my food plan, but I have a history of using going out to eat and my weight going down and down. And so for my food, I'm making sure I get enough. And it is a complete miracle that I do it. I have sat across from senators. I don't want to pretend my life is so important. I'm not always eating with senators. But even when I do, I measure right in front of them. And I'll just tell you one little, I know there's so many people who ask questions, but a beautiful story is that I usually just change the subject as I'm mentioning my food, so I don't have to talk about it, right? If people ask, I just say medical reasons or I've got some food stuff happening, and we move on. I ask them about their kids or travel, but a senator was sitting across from me, and he says, I don't want to pretend I didn't see what I just saw. What's going on there? And I said, I looked at him, and I don't know why. Sometimes we're just called to do something, and I said, do you want to know the real answer, or are you just asking? And he said, I want to know the real answer. I said, well, I'm in recovery, and I use the word eating disorder. I don't know why I picked that word. I picked different words at different times. I said, I'm in recovery from an eating disorder, and this is how I can go out and eat with people. And he started tearing up. And he said, my daughter's in treatment for an eating disorder, and from what they're telling me, it seems like we'll never get to travel or go out as a family to eat. And you're showing me that we can. We can take care of her and help her wherever she goes. And I just think, I don't know why we're called to do different things at different times, but I felt so grateful that day. I don't always tell people everything. He wasn't entitled to my story, but I'm grateful that I was called to do so that day. I got way off track on that question, but thank you, Shelley, for the question.
Thank you very much, Shelley, for the question this morning. Caroline S., you're up next with your question.
Hi, this is Carolyn S. from New York, a recovered compulsive overeater. So my question is, I was really able to relate to the need to limit screen time. Mm-hmm. Once I pick up my phone or my computer, hours disappear. And I love what you said about making program calls and how that actually saves you time because you're not stuck on the computer screen or the phone screen. I also can't do social media. You didn't talk about that, so I don't know if you do, but I find that not only does it eat a lot of time, but it usually makes me feel bad about myself. So I guess my question is, do you give yourself a certain amount of time to do each thing? Do you avoid it completely, Facebook or whatever you do? That was it.
Thank you. And even though, right, we're focused here on
compulsive overeating, right? And our relationship, that it's not such an outside issue. Cause I don't know about any of you, but like part of my disease was like shoveling food and like staring at a screen, you know? And so staring at a screen is like a, it can be like a leading behavior backwards. And so I've had no success at limiting my time. It's almost like me trying to control my food. It has not worked for me. That doesn't mean it won't work for you. But filling my life with other things and talking about it honestly with people in program is what's starting to change that. In terms of my relationship with social media, everyone's got a different one. For me, it's a way to, it has not been, that's not where, it goes for me more of like the internet shopping is the problem. But social media, it's actually been delightful to see people I've grown up with and just keep in touch with people. And I also, you know, I had to stop in the pandemic sharing my political views to make, because I thought I had to teach everyone my views. And suddenly social media became a horrible place for me when I started doing that. And I realized I can't handle that kind of disturbance. I can't try to teach anyone or change anyone. So that's really changed my relationship with social media. But I also know a lot of people use pictures of people as a source of pain. And for some reason, that's not where my disease has gone. But it could, because I've watched it with a lot of other people in our program. So that's where it's at for me today. And it is not perfect, not even close. So
thank you very much for the question this morning. Irini from New York, you're up with your question. Press star one.
Did you? Oh, okay. Good morning. Apologies. Good morning, Rena. This is Irini. I'm calling from New York. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I loved the stories that you shared. And I got a sense from your share that you are busy. You talked about food and exercise, teaching, working with clients. You're in several programs. You have a life partner. You get outside help. You're in service in your meetings. You travel. You're committed to your 10th and 11th steps and 12th step. I have a two-part question. What have you learned through recovery about balance from overextending? And then part two is, what have you learned about your relationships to others, and in particular with your spouse, who sounds like he's looking out for you? Thanks, I'll pass.
Those are great questions. Thank you for asking both of them. I feel very heard by you, so thank you, especially. On the balance front, I'm aware now, I didn't used to know this, but I need downtime every day. And I don't just mean like sit meditation time. I need like, and that is downtime, but I need silly time, like where I'm just, I don't know, silly is not the right word, where I'm just reading a book, or I'm into this adult Lego building or 3D puzzles as of late, but often it's just reading a book or staring into space. I don't know. I just need downtime. And it sounds like with all the different things I have going that I don't have that. And I have that every day. I'm very fortunate, one, that I work for myself, right, like in my law practice. And then, so I get to set the times when I do things. And so I could take a 2-hour break to do a meeting and hear a friend give a lead and do a big book workshop, and maybe I'll get work done later. Or maybe I'll work on a Sunday night, because that's okay too. To me, it's all the same any day of the week for me. So that really is a gift, like that I'm very fortunate that I'm not on the clock. And for my teaching, you know, I get to just come in and teach my class, and I get to prepare for it as I want, you know? And so, except for the actual teaching time, it's really all on my own schedule, unless a judge is ordering me someplace. And in terms of program boundaries, it's really important for me that my outreach calls are short, unless it's like a specific, particularly deep call, and that maybe happens once every couple of weeks when something really deep hits and we get into it. But I keep my 10 and 11 step calls, you know, my 11 step call where we're each sharing that, you know, it's 15 minutes or less. And with my sponsees, I set calls, but they know it's never going to be more than 30 minutes, ever. I stop it at 30 minutes. And the reason why I do that is not because I'm so important or I'm always that busy, but I used to hate sponsoring when I did it without boundaries. I set the call times in advance. I know when they are. They know when they are. They're 30 minutes. I've started to combine, once my sponsees become recovered,
we meet all together. We try, like every other week, and we do a Zoom together and we read a big book story and talk about it as a way to stay connected, but there's time limits on it. So that's really helped me, as to set, my outreach calls are about 5 minutes, just checking in. How are you doing? How's your program? What's your relationship with God like? Is there a 10th step to be had? And also, even on the 10th steps, I used to get super and think I had to listen to the long story. But so some of the big work workshop I've been doing lately, it's really shown me, why so attached to the story of what went wrong, right? Just, in the big book, it's short. What happened, They got those 4 steps down to, 19 words of what happened. And so sometimes I'll just pause in someone in the middle and say, let's get to the solution. So it's tough to set those boundaries, but the boundaries really help. And then in terms of your second question, about relationship with my spouse, I'm just going to tell you this. I don't know how I get so lucky, but I feel like I know that not everyone has a spouse that isn't supportive, but also is independent. And I'll say this, the years where I was in relapse, he didn't wait home when I refused to leave the house. He didn't say, I'm not going to go out then either. He said, I love you. I wish you would come, but I'm going to go live our life still. And he wasn't angry or resentful. He just went. And that was such a gift to me. And that's how her recovery goes. If I want to go to a meeting or I need to not go, but whatever it is that I need to do, he's got his life, I've got mine. And we are very much together, but also we each have our own, I travel to recovery retreats. We can be traveling together and I'm making outreach calls, going to a meeting, talking, and it's all good. So I don't know how what else to say is, except for that I don't know how I got so lucky. And I feel very fortunate that it's not a battle, that I don't have to fight for space to take care of myself or for my recovery, because I don't honestly know what that would look like for me. So I don't have experience with that. I'm just very grateful that that I get to have my own recovery process and feel supported. So that was a lot of rambling. My apologies. That's it.
Thank you for your question, Rini. Anita J, your question now. Hi. And then Jessica, you'll follow Anita. Hi, good morning, Anita.
Good morning, Melanie. Thank you so much, Rina, for your share. People have been asking everything I wanted, except one I'd like to ask. Well, first of all, I appreciate the clear-cut boundaries around the food. The longer I've remained abstinent, I see that it isn't easier, it's harder. And I'm wondering if some of the foods have changed for you, or the amounts, or anything like that, but also how your God has evolved. Thank you very much.
Thank you. On the food front, I will say that my red foods, whatever you want to, I don't usually use that term because it implies there are yellow, and I don't understand. Yellow foods have never worked for me. Yellow foods are actually probably the ones I'm the most attached to, because I'm trying to fight for them and negotiate. So my no foods, whatever those are, the ingredients that are poison to me, that are, alcoholic foods for me, that has not changed, and I don't see that changing. I might discover something else that I haven't to date. That's a pretty full list, but something that could change. Something might need to be added to that, and I'm willing to have that happen. And for me, it's more about the amounts, and the amounts is set by a nutritionist and not me. And it is sometimes hard for me to surrender to that, right? But I do surrender to that because apparently my body needs more food. It's so crazy how I can binge on 10,000 calories in our disease, but the minute you give me a food plan, suddenly, oh no, I can't eat that much. I don't think I'm unique in that regard, but I just, my body's needs changes in terms of amount sometimes. It hasn't for a while, but it has over the past few years. And I've surrendered that to a nutritionist. Whatever she says, I do. I don't even question it because I can't afford to. I cannot afford to be in the debating society about my food. In terms of relationship with God, I would say that is the most transforming journey, ongoing change. I did not come into this program believing in God. I was first shown the steps, and I thought, I will never be able to do this program. And then I read that we can come up with our own conception of God, but even that I couldn't do. And then this last go round, I was like, what? Am I so proud? So too smart for joy? Am I too smart for God? Like what? Like the God idea works for all of you. So why couldn't the God idea work for me? And this, through a workshop, through someone who could be on this line now, but I know regularly shares at this meeting, I remember I asked the question, like, what if I never, this was like 1 week back with my current sponsor, and I said, what if I never feel God? Like, I'm just terrified, like, after all these years in recovery, I don't feel it inside. And she's like, you know, she started to take me through these questions, right, in almost a Socratic way, and the idea that, like, and she said, she goes, do you think it works for us? And I said, yeah, I definitely see it works for us. You see that maybe it could work for you, like, but do you think it will? Like, no. And she said, do you think you're not deserving? I said, yeah, that might just be it. And she said, what if nowhere in the big book does it say we need to be deserving? What if it's not about deserve? Because nowhere does it say that in the big book or anywhere else that you have to be deserving, you know? And that freed me up to start to develop a relationship with God. And so I find myself, one, I'm not afraid to say the word God. I still sometimes say the universe, which is how I actually feel. It also helps for me to start a morning prayer, to start with, like, God, I don't know if you're there. And just saying that frees me up to believe that somebody's there. Just starting the conversation, starting with my doubt, the honesty and vulnerability of that doubt. I would say that I have a lot of room to grow spiritually. Like, my morning routine is short. It is not long, you know, it's just a few things. And I pray to be open to more time, be willing to spend more time with a higher power connection throughout the day and in the morning. But the best thing for me is an outreach call when someone says, how is your relationship with your higher power today? And I'm like, my what? Oh, yeah, I have a higher power. Why am I not talking to my higher power today? So sometimes those outreach calls bring me right back to, like, where I haven't been. So that's it.
Thank you very much for the question this morning. Jessica C., you're up with a question, followed by Nancy C.
Hi, thank you. Hi, Rena. I've gotten so much out of your talk today. Thank you so much. I wanted to ask you about your job. You seem very career-oriented, and I'm just wondering if you experience fear around measuring up with your career and your work. I'm about to embark on a new role myself, and that's totally a miracle that God led me to change, to move away from something that I had become comfortable with and start a new opportunity. But yeah, a lot of I'm experiencing some fear again around my job, which had become quiet, and now it's coming back, and I'm just wondering if you could share your experience, strength, and hope in that area.
Yeah, thank you. I love what I get to do for work. It's another, I don't know how I got so lucky moment in my life, but I do love what I get to do. And there are moments where I am super, like, anxious and feeling stressed. It helps me to remember. One, I set a lot of boundaries around it in terms of, like, my recovery comes first. But it's funny enough, in the midst of a deadline to get a brief due the next day to a big court, it's somehow pausing and doing a programmed thing, going to a meeting, making an outreach call, having a moment of prayer. It's creating the time for that somehow frees me up with the brief writing, with the terror, and sometimes I just have to, it's the self-talk of, like, what... Who am I to, like, judge whether, like, do I think I'm so smart that I'm tricking everyone into thinking I can do this? Like I'm so smart that I'm tricking everyone into not seeing how stupid I am that I can't do this. Like, sometimes the absurdity actually, it hits me, you know, that just to trust that if other people think I can do this and they've asked me to do this or I've been called on to do this, that to just do it and to let go of having to be perfect or do it right.
And it does help, you know, I sometimes say, like, I'm going to write a word and I'm going to let God write the next word, like when I'm stuck with a blank page and don't know what to do. And I don't even know what that means to say that, because my faith is, you've heard, is it is always it's wavering, you know, my faith comes and goes momentarily. But sometimes it really helps to say, okay, God, you take care of that details. You take care of the outcome. I am just a chess piece here. So there's been no formal process, of, you know, but I used to feel like I was the biggest fraud ever. I mean, you heard about my plagiarism when I was younger, you know, I felt like such a fraud. And somewhere along the line, I stopped feeling that way. And I don't know whether that's just sheer time or the program or what, but I do know that I'm doing the best that I can. And that helps, that like, I'm just doing the best that I can do. And if it's, and I don't know what the outcome is. I just sometimes just lift my hands up. So that was also not the most clear answer. I'm sorry, but that's where it's at for me right now. So great question.
Thank you very much for the question. Nancy C., your question this morning.
Hey, good morning, Melanie. Mm-hmm. Rena, thank you so much. Nancy C. gratefully recovered this morning in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And Rena, you really touched my heart and gave a very pointed mm-hmm. message to me today. And I think is what is really, really stuck out to me is your statement. You said three times today that someone had the guts to stand up to my disease when you were working with your sponsor. And I think that a lot of times I have trouble standing up to people, and I'm asking because you seem to have developed a really good sense of boundaries. And how did that develop? I think that the seed, it sounds like, started with someone had the guts to stand up to your disease. And if you could elaborate on that a little bit, I'd really appreciate it. And again, thank you for your wonderful share this morning.
Thank you. I'm in your state today. I'm in Detroit, in a hotel in Detroit right now, so not too far. I don't live far from Ann Arbor, but I'm even closer right now. But I think in terms of boundaries, someone gave a lead at the Cornwall meeting yesterday, and he said something that I also really, I believe, for like what I do with food is a metaphor for everything else I do in my life. And the boundaries I'm willing to set around food is the boundaries I'm willing to set everywhere else. And that has organically happened in my life. It does take effort, you know, it does take effort. But also, I think that it starts with, it started with the food plan. It started with the food, and it has affected every area of my life. And I also want to note that I've learned so much from my sponsor about how to have the guts to stand up to the disease. And I don't always do that with my sponsees. That is an area I struggle with also. And we also all have different styles and different personalities, but I also pray for the willingness to have more guts to stand up to the disease as a sponsor. Because I sometimes don't. And I wish there's a lot of room for growth in that area for me. So, but thank you for asking. I seek to have more boundaries in that, or not even boundaries, to just have more guts, more courage when it comes to standing up to our disease.
Thank you so much for the question, Nancy, this morning. Olivia Kay, you have time for a question here from Illinois.
Good morning. Thank you, Melanie. And Rena, your share was fabulous. Thank you so much. I wanted to ask you a little bit about the 11th step, and you talked about having a partner and doing maybe an 11th step train, or if you could just describe what that is, that would be wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And I want to just note about the 11th step, there are so many ways to work, right, to do it, right? It tells us what to do in the big book, but how to act out on that and how to get support with that, right? For some people, it's a quiet process alone at home before bed. For me, it was not happening alone on my own, so I needed support with just to do it. And so having the 11-step train has been great. What it is my sponsor had given me, and there's you can reach out to me, there's other people it's an email list. I emailed somebody the 10-11 train. I was given the email address, and
I said I would like, you know, I'm recovered and I'd like to be on the train. And I think there's different trains for people at different points in program. But in any event, this one was for after I finished working through the steps, but there's different trains, I think. And so I, and then every, after learning about the train, how it worked, and every 2 weeks I'm given a new train partner. And I get to know somebody for 2 weeks in this program in a deeper way. And we just do this 11th step right out of the big book, right? Like it just goes right down those things of, you know, where was I selfish, dishonest, resentful, afraid? Where do I need, you know, where have I done harm? If I need to make amends? How was I of service today? What else do we talk about? I, you know, is there something I haven't shared with somebody that needs to be discussed at once? Is there corrective measures, you know, to be made for the next day or even that, right, you know, in my life? And then also we share usually a gratitude list. I have done it all over the world. I have been in Alaska. I have been everywhere and shown up for the calls in airports, on planes. And I tell you, it has been such a treat to get to know people in this deeper way for 2 weeks. And it's so ideal because if it was a best friend, we would never get to the be blabbing about our days. But what's great is in this 2 week, the way we know each other for 2 weeks, it's like it's just enough to still track, but to get to know each other deeper. So I really love the 10-11 the train and the Amon. And there's, I want to be clear, there are so many, some people want to just work with somebody who really knows them, right? Deeply already. You know, like there's so many ways, but I'm very grateful for the one I'm on.
Thank you so much for the question. And let's see, we got well, it looks like maybe, is it Sherry? Because we just went with Jenny, right? So Sherry M.
Hi. Thank you so much. And Rena, I really appreciate all your stories. It's like all the stories, it's like all the chapters. It's really, really good. I think you kind of touched upon this a little bit, but I just wanted to ask you, do you ever find that when you sit down for your prayer and meditation, that all of a sudden it's over and you're like, I'm distracted. Like, what happened? Do you ever, does that happen to you?
100% yes. If someone says otherwise, I don't know who they are. I'm just kidding. I'm sure some of people, I just want to be super honest. Like, sometimes I'm like, what? Sometimes I fall asleep. Sometimes I'm fantasizing about a purse I want or whatever article on the news I read. You know what I mean? Like, I really struggle in this area, but I want to believe that I'm not unique. Sometimes I tell myself I am the worst prayer and meditator person ever. And then I'm like, oh, my judgment, you know, like my judgment is what keeps me alone. I think it actually is what connects us with how much effort it really takes, you know. Relapse takes no effort. What takes effort is recovery. And so for me, it really does take effort. And I'm not always willing first thing in the morning to do that, you know. And prayer and meditation time is the biggest struggle of my recovery. And I know it's the thing I need the most and the area where I'm grateful that I have room to grow and I'm willing to keep growing. But great question. Yes, I definitely zone out or don't know what the heck happened. Not half the time, but a lot of the time. Yeah. Still, I show up though. The key is I show up for it.
Very good. Excellent. You know what? I'm not real sure. Did I capture Jenny? Did she ask the question just before Sherry? Do you remember, Rena? If I did not. Jenny, are you there?
All of a sudden, for the first time, the line is crackling out. I don't know if it's my phone or your phone.
Is it? It might be mine. It could be mine. I'm sorry, I missed you. I bet I did, didn't I? Yes, I can, loud and clear. Is it still crackling, you guys? Oh, apparently no. Okay, so go ahead with your question. My apologies.
You're good.
For passing you up there. Yeah.
Hi, Lena. Wonderful job today. Thank you so much. One of the things that I found in program that keeps me coming back when nothing else does is my friendships with other members of OA. And I just want to hear about what it is you look for when you find a friend in OA.
So I don't know if it's my phone. I might need to call back in, but I'm not understanding the question. I think it's my phone and I need to call back in.
Yeah, well, let's give you a time. Yeah, dial back in. We'll just hang out here and play a little elevator.
I'm going to call right back in because I don't know why I'm not hearing, but I'm going to call back in.
Mm-hmm. What's the thing? Anyway, Jenny, just hang on just a moment, and it won't take long to dial back in, and we'll just kind of hang in with each other for just a moment. But in the meantime, welcome to, and I'll give you the share ID number for you again for this particular Sunday special edition. It's 21412, 21,402. Gives you a chance to go back over that again.
This is Rena. I'm back on. Sorry about
that. What do
you think? I just was like, no, now it's good. I was getting every other word, and thank you.
Understand. Jenny, your question again, please.
Hi, Rena. It's Jenny.
Hello.
Great job. Thank you so much for sharing this morning. Wonderful surprise for me this morning. One of the things that I was thinking about when you were speaking was the many times that you've had to keep coming back to the program. And for me, to keep coming back, even when, you know, nothing else was working, the friendships are what kept me coming back. Can you talk about what your friendships look like in OA, what you look for in a friend?
Thank you. What a lovely question. I'm grateful that you're one of my OA friends. I'll just start by saying that. And, I don't know what that I look for in an OA friend. Like, I don't know how to answer that question, but I do know that my relationships with people in program have been what have sustained me. And even in the depths of relapse, I have sustained those relationships as much as I can sustain any relationship in relapse, because I start to drop off and farther to the point that I am totally alone. But I will say that my friends in program are like some of the deepest friendships. And I will say also that sometimes I hear people on leave talk about like their God squad and how it's the best, they've met the best people in a way ever. And suddenly I feel like, well, I don't have all of that, you know? And I start to feel like, oh my God, I'm like this dangler off, you know, I'm not in the center of the herd. And then all it takes is something like this today and the number of people that texted me this morning who knew I was doing this and people that have been like checking that hear their voices on the line now that I consider friends. And I'm like, I am right here with everyone else. And so I wanted to share that because sometimes I hear people sharing and I can tell myself I'm different, that I'm not part of this program and or not part of the group, like as if I'm still in junior high and there's some like in-group of recovery people. And that's just a lie my disease has always told me. You know, it doesn't take much. It just takes a few people. And making those outreach calls, if you're having trouble finding those people, is a good way to get started. Because you'll talk with someone and maybe a one call will just hit. And there's one person, and hopefully she's still on the line, that I don't know what happened. We just started talking and we've been talking. And when I go to visit Miami, which I go to a lot and she lives there, we see each other. We talk. I mean, it's such a treat. And it just started from a random outreach call on one of those outreach call apps. So for me, if you're having trouble connecting and finding your people, the more you call people, the more you'll have a chance of finding your people, you know. And what's the truth is anyone in OA can be my people when I'm open to it. So
thank you very much for the question. And looking at the time, it's just flown by this morning. That's the last question we'll have the opportunity to take today for this particular session. So thanks again, Rena, for your heart and your recovery and your wisdom born of recovery, right, that we get here. So we're going to close within the usual fashion that we do here at A Vision for You by reading from page 164. And then once the recording has been stopped, we'll get Rena's telephone number. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.